Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impoga. This evening we'll talk about the impact of climate change in Africa. And with us tonight is Fred Omolo. Fred is a Kenyan journalist. He joins us by phone from Kisumu. Good evening, Fred.
Good evening, Douglas. Thank you for having me.
You're very much welcome. And also we are joined by a regular panelist, Suleiman Mugula. He's an independent political analyst. He joins us by phone from Durban, South Africa. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas. Thank you very much for inviting me.
You're very much welcome. And tonight we're talking about climate change in Africa, its impact, whether there's enough being done to address the issue. According to reports, Africa is the last large source of arable land, minerals, and fossil fuels. It's also one of the least equipped to manage and protect its resources sustainably. The continent's population and economies are growing, but often at the cost of its natural capital. That is the forest, freshwater, soil, and wildlife that its people rely on. Of the world's 20 countries most vulnerable to agricultural production loss due to climate change, 16 are in Africa. So why don't we start from there, Fred? First of all, do people there have an idea of what climate change is? And if so, is anything being done?
I can say yes and yes to both questions. Mostly because Kenya is a unique society where 60 to 70% of the population relies on agriculture for their income at the household level. Whether directly or indirectly, we have farmers who are producing what they're producing, and then we have people within the supply chain, the agricultural supply chain. And over the last 20 years, we have witnessed significant changes in climate. In your introduction there, you said two very key words. You said least equipped. And the truth is, there is a very deep awareness about climate change in Kenya, mostly because of the weather patterns over the last 20 years. Even I can very, very faithfully attest to very significant climate changes that have resulted in extreme weather phenomena that have affected agriculture. And when they affect agriculture, it always immediately, within 2 to 3 months, it immediately translates into the availability of food, into conditions of drought, into famines and issues of that nature. In terms of being equipped, you asked me, and I said yes. Yes, people are aware, yes, the government is equipped. How is it equipped? In terms of appropriate legislation. In Kenya, we have two or three major laws, one of which is the Environmental Management and Conservancy Act, which decides and dictates how environmental issues are supposed to be handled. Then we have beneath that about 5 to 7 different regulations regarding wetland management, regulations regarding solid waste disposal, etc. Fine. Mm-hmm. So people are aware. Number two, the laws and the frameworks are there. Mm-hmm. Number three, are people doing it? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's where the problem starts, right?
Okay. Suleiman,
since independence up, briefly, uh-huh. Since independence up until this day when we are speaking for this program, the environment infrastructure and ministry has always been politicized and a political reward position that whoever is in power uses to reward their friends. Right now, we have our environmental minister. He's not even an environmentalist. He's a lawyer by training, a former public prosecutor, you see. So, unfortunately, the infrastructure is always kept in the hands of politicians and people who are being rewarded by politicians for whatever favors they deliver. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, we are not able to effectively implement all these environmental regulations, despite the deep awareness among people, even at the grassroots.
I see. Suleiman, I don't know if you heard all of what Fred said, but what's the situation like in South Africa? as far as people being aware and the government doing something about it?
Actually, regardless of the fact that the main media is very much obsessed with the day-to-day political happenings in the country, the fact of the matter is that the effects of climate change are a reality and a crisis in South Africa. In South Africa here, we have got a serious drought problem, which is affecting the country. Right now, we have even got groups which are farmers' groups in the country, which are calling on the government to declare it a national disaster. Many of the provinces in the country, from the 9 provinces, almost all the provinces are affected. We have got provinces like Limpopo, Eastern Cape, Western Cape, where we have got massive deaths of livestock, we have got water shortages, the water gets cut off, some people go days without water, they have to get water tanks carrying water to them. So there is water rationing in provinces like that one of Gauteng, which is Johannesburg, Pretoria area. So the water crisis and the drought crisis is a national problem at the moment, which takes us to the point that actually the people are very much aware of the effects of climate change and they are very much alive to what is happening. Is the government doing something? Of course, South Africa is a different country compared to those on the continent. We have got an accountable government. We have got structures, we have got non-government organizations, all of them active. Regardless of the limited capacity which the government might have, there are so many structures which are likely to intervene. Like now, the way they want to call upon the government to declare it a national disaster, the intention is that there should be the mobilization of resources nationally, whereby government, unlike you on the continent, fortunately for us in South Africa, we are fairly well off. The resources are there. What is important is the ability to mobilize it. So when they say they want to a national emergency to be declared, it means government will get the opportunity to mobilize resources, start getting money to give farmers, to support farmers, to give water to all areas, to give support livestock farmers, and so on and so forth. So those interventions, the government is capable of doing it, and it is already involved into it. So unlike you on the continent, in South Africa, we are much alive to it, we are much aware, and government is taking steps. However, insufficient they might be, but the government is on the top of the game.
I see. Fred, Suleiman there says the government in South Africa is taking steps. They might not be enough, but they are at least trying to take steps. You also earlier alluded to the fact that the laws are in place. People are aware about this issue. But as both of you know, on average, 80% of the African population is dependent on agriculture for their livelihoods. And with obvious signs and results of climate change, this could be a time bomb.
Yeah, it's true. The way you're saying it is a time bomb. And let me give credit where credit is due. The current environment minister, whom I just mentioned previously, a lawyer by training, has made a very hard decision this year to conserve a very important water tower in Kenya. In Kenya, we have various water towers, and water towers are basically water catchment areas where various rivers and various water bodies emanate from. Now, this water tower is called the Mau Complex. The Mau Complex is the source of 5 rivers, and these rivers flow through Kenya. Two of them flow through Kenya, 3 of them flow through Tanzania, and some of them go as far as Rwanda and other such areas. Now, something strange happened 25 years ago. When the president at that time, Daniel Moi, was starting to become politically unstable, he decided that he needed
to reward politicians and to encourage people at the grassroots whom he could rely on to strengthen him in every electoral cycle. So they targeted the Mau Water Tower, which is a forest. It's a big forest. It covers almost 100,000 hectares, and it's the source of the famous Mara River that flows into Tanzania and back into Kenya into Lake Victoria. It is also a major source of the waters that flow into Lake Tanganyika in Tanzania and other lakes and such bodies in the region. As we speak now, the Mau has been encroached into almost 40%. And these people moved in, they bought land, or they settled, or they were allocated land there. Schools were built, markets, shopping centers, within that forest. What was the consequence? A lot of indigenous trees, a lot of natural water-attracting trees were lost. So, over the last 10, 15 years, starting with the presidency of Mwai Kibaki, who took over from Daniel Moi, there have been efforts to evict these settlers. The problem has been so politically explosive because a new ethnicity moved in and there are almost 100,000 of them there. They have a constituency there. They have a member of parliament there. And any time there was a mention of evicting these people to conserve this, to regrow the forest back to where it should, to prevent our neighbors like Tanzania, like Rwanda, like Burundi from suffering because of our actions, there was always a political backlash. And for 20 years now, the effort to remove these people has always failed. This year, the environment minister has moved very aggressively, and he's pushed back all of these political issues, and he's managed. This week alone, in the last week alone, they've been able to plant 10 million trees. Mm-hmm. They've been able to reclaim so much. They've been able to demolish so many settlements. So there are efforts being placed right there. But the environmental challenge in Kenya is so big because there are so many water catchments around this country. This country supplies so many other areas, including Somalia, Sudan, Ethiopia, etc. Mm. And all of these places, the forests and the riparian areas and the wetlands have been encroached on. People come in, they build communities, villages, they build malls, and all sorts of useless things.
I see.
So it is a really explosive problem in simple terms.
Yeah. So
politically, it's very difficult. Yeah.
I see. Okay, so Suleiman, what about the situation down there in Southern Africa? Let's not South Africa and its neighboring countries. How serious is the issue, for instance, of deforestation and encroaching on wetlands by those who have the means or the power to do so?
Actually, before you even talk about wetlands, and it, we are still struggling with the effects of the climate change itself. As you are well aware, the whole of Southern Africa was affected by Cyclone Idai and the Cyclone Kenneth. So Mozambique was badly hit, Malawi was hit, Zimbabwe was hit, so Zambia was hit. So at the moment, you are talking of the immediate problem. The immediate problem is to solve the current effects which are there. And you find that if you are to go by the figures of Oxfam, Oxfam is talking of 52 million people who are food insecure at the moment in Eastern Central Africa. So at the moment, we are dealing with the effects of the climate change itself. As far as the degradation, ours has been more, because for us, we have got, in most of the countries here, we have got, like in South Africa, we have got an accountable government. You cannot simply encroach on the land anyhow. There are laws governing them which have to be looked at. So is Botswana. So in most of these countries, we don't have rogue regimes as such. Our effects are basically the effects of climate change, which are encroaching on us, which we are trying to deal with. So at the moment, we are dealing with a problem, with the pressure. A lot of population is being affected. And what is so bad about us is that in most of the countries, we have got a dual problem. Some areas are affected, they have got drought, others have got floods. So you find that countries are hit doubly. In some cases, like Zambia, you have one part being hit by drought and then another being hit by by floods.
Mm-hmm.
So is Mozambique also. It has got areas, the center and the north, they are affected by floods, and then the southern, which is semi-arid, is affected by drought. So for us, the issue is not about environmental degradation as such. It is more about the climate effects themselves.
I see. Well, for those just joining us, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from the Voice of America series in Washington. Tonight, we're talking about the impact of climate change on the continent. Our panelists are Fred Omolo, a Kenyan journalist, and Suleiman Mugula, a South African-based independent political analyst. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio One in Washington. Now, gentlemen, some of both of your countries at some point had issues with land ownership. Let's put it that way. Let me begin with the Fred there. There's across the continent, there's the issue of land grabbing by those in power or those who have the means. In some other countries, actually, the governments are leasing out land to other countries, European countries or Arab countries, to come and Chinese companies. How is that being handled in Kenya, for instance?
In Kenya, so far, we haven't had, for example, the notion of foreigners coming in to lease large tracts of land for agricultural or whatever other purposes. I remember a decade ago, there was a proposal by some Arab countries, I think it was Qatar and the UAE, United Arab Emirates, to come and lease some land so that they could do agricultural production. And the backlash was so immense that the government immediately dropped the idea. The Chinese have also tried that in the last 5 years to come in with their systems and to use it for productivity, agricultural productivity, and that also faced the same fate. The public is not willing to entertain such things. And usually, I mean, Kenya is a very, very connected society. As much as we are still in Africa, we are still a third world country, information travels fast, thanks mostly to the internet. So when issues come up in terms of there's this proposal that the government is considering about this country or this organization or this company coming in to do ABCD, in terms of environmental awareness, the backlash is usually almost immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And I can probably say that is the progressive thing that we have around here. There's a lot of negative things that the government would have done if the populace was not environmentally aware and environmentally concerned. Case in point, there was a proposal to build a coal plant. Imagine, in this day and age, someone wanted to build a coal plant in the coast of Kenya in Lamu. Lamu is one of the best tourist sites. Kenya. I mean, it ranks there among the top five. Across the whole county, they have all sorts of tourism, attractive tourism artifacts and sites and hotels and whatnot. The entire economy of that county is built upon tourism and the pristine environment that they have. It was discovered that there is coal there, and the government has been trying for the last 4 years to lease out, to give out leases to Chinese companies to come and mine coal there. But the resistance has been so strong that they have not succeeded up until this point.
I see.
There is always a court case. There is always a determination. So in terms of that, that is the situation here. People know where we are heading as a planet, right? And they are not willing to cede the pristine environment they have for commercial consideration.
I see. Although that has been the case in maybe neighboring Uganda, they have some, I don't know,
yeah.
And other countries. Suleiman, how is it in Southern Africa?
Southern Africa, I think there is a correlation between transparent democratic governance and the issues of environmental usage and land usage. In South Africa, of course, we are a democracy. Most of the issues are handled democratically. We have got our land problems, historical. They are being handled politically and transparently. I think Southern Africa, we have been relatively lucky because we have had some stable governments in Botswana, in Mozambique, not so bad. Namibia, I think the only odd man out was Zimbabwe there. That is where you find issues like those ones found in East African countries. In countries which have got rogue regimes which have overstayed like that one in Zimbabwe, you get those problems definitely. Land grabbing, it is most in Zimbabwe, as far as Southern Africa is concerned. And then you'll find it in East African countries like those ones in Uganda, where the leadership is directionless. Otherwise, as Fred has said, if there is a transparent government, if there is a change of government democratically, whenever policies go against what the people want, there is always change of leadership. So if you have got a leader who has stayed in power for years and years, like the way Mugabe was, then that leadership can do anything. He has got the liberty to grab people's land. He has got the liberty to give away lands to the Chinese and other investors, as it happened in Zimbabwe, as it is happening in Uganda and some other countries which are led by dictatorial. So we have got issues to do with the governance of the country, where we are having problems of land grabbing and environmental degradation at a large scale.
I see. Talking of land planning and all that, as most of our listeners may know, farmers who depend on rain to grow crops are already feeling the effects of climate change.
Yeah.
Now, according to projections, the current population of nearly 1 billion people in sub-Saharan Africa is expected to double in the next 30, 40 years to come. How far, this is general on the continent, but you can start with your respective countries if you wish, beginning with Fred. How far is the government looking ahead? Because the population is going up, land is not expanding, and the weather is changing. Yeah.
I'll be honest with you, there's no specific future plans. What we are doing at this point, we are being reactive, right? We are reacting to whatever crisis comes upon us at that particular moment. Right now, for example, I actually enrolled for a postgraduate course in environmental science, and there are only two universities in Kenya that offer this, University of Nairobi and Maseno University. I'm in Maseno. And I've been speaking there with the professors, with all the experts, because they are always attached to whatever counties or national government functions that they have there. And they've been telling me very honestly, the truth is, right now, environmentally, Kenya is on a reactive mode. We are approaching a tipping point, yes, because the people are aware. That's the only reason. The grassroots people are aware that we have a problem. But at the administrative level, at the government level, at the policy level, there is nothing serious being done in terms of population, handling the population growth increase, planning for these people, settling these people, making sure that certain areas are residential areas, commercial areas, and then you have areas that you must just leave for nature to take its course. We don't have any overarching plan. If you look at the laws, they are less than five. None of them speaks about future planning in this country. Mm-hmm. That's the problem we have as Kenya.
I see. How is the situation in South Africa, Suleiman? And South Africa is in a unique place, because even if it planned, it is a neighborhood where they'll have to get more people from neighboring countries that are in dire stress.
Exactly. That is the biggest problem. The problem of South Africa is not South Africa. The problem of South Africa is the poor leadership which is surrounding South Africa. As you are well aware, ever since the Idai and Kenneth cyclone, I think it is UNICEF which has been manning the emergency services in Mozambique. They were caught with the pants down. If you go to Zambia, you find that they are struggling with the issues of climate change and issues of displacement of people, so many people in ID, so many people with the food insecurity who is involved. You find it is Red Cross which is involved. If you go to East Africa, you find it is Oxfam which is involved, together with the United Nations. In Zimbabwe, it is United Nations, I mean, the UN has just put up a prayer for $300 million dollars, a plea for Zimbabwe alone. So you find that most of our countries, the governance is not ready. As Frida said, there is no strategic plans, there is no long-term planning. They are dealing with these issues, they are reacting to the issues as they come. So it is even worse for the countries which have got regimes which don't change. Those are rusted, they are out of, they don't have any plans. They are just minding about their own business. They are just minding about staying in power. Unless you have got transparent, democratic regimes where people are involved in the governance of the country, where you have got non-government organizations, where you have got political parties competing in ideas, you cannot have any progress. So countries like Uganda, countries like Rwanda, countries like DRC, all those countries who have had regimes which have stayed for long, they have had to have a problem. And they are the ones who are sending people to South Africa. So as South Africa is bearing the burden of all those countries which are having stress due to poor governance.
I see. We're about to run out of time, but briefly, to both of you, beginning with Fred. The issue of climate change and the environment needs a united front. The countries in Africa must act as a team, because climate change doesn't go pinpoint a country and leave the other. So do you see the countries coming together and formulating a policy for the future? Be very brief.
Well, Douglas, it is either we come together and do something or we die, because nature is a very unforgiving mother. It rewards you greatly if you do something about conserving it, or it punishes you greatly if you don't do anything about conserving it. So we have a very stark choice right now, and that is one of the reasons I actually decided to study environmental science. We must come together. It is not even an option. It's not even political. We must save ourselves or we will all perish. When things go wrong, when there's no longer any water, who can live? Who can survive? When there's no rain, when the droughts are too much, who can survive?
Mm-hmm.
We will all die, regardless of our political affiliations, religion, social classes, and everything. We are all finished.
I see. Suleiman, briefly.
According to studies of Oxfam, 18 countries in the few years, they have lost almost $700 million due to climate-related disasters. Most of the economic development of many countries, including South Africa, are being lowered due to the effects coming from the climate effects, because of agriculture is being affected, livestock is being affected, and so on. So the African countries, they have got a duty. They have got a duty to meet and be meet and find a way forward. Luckily enough, on November 11th to November 15th, we have got an African Ministerial Council which is supposed to sit in Durban, South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
It is going to pave a way on environmental sustainability on the continent.
Well, that's a good start.
Much as these African countries need, but there is little hope because, for example, the developed countries pledged that by the year 2020, they will give Africa about $100 billion to mitigate climate issues.
Yes,
they don't have the ability.
Yes, we shall come to that in another topic, because even the concern that the climate change is a result of other industrialized countries, that's another issue. But unfortunately, we are out of time. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Fred Omulo, a Kenyan journalist, and Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Our producer tonight was Dan Brown, and our engineer was Joe Gill. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. In case you missed any or part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website at vonnews.com, click on programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. Thanks once again for tuning in, and until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Simpoga in Washington.
This is VOA News. I'm Jim Bertel.